Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Always nice to have you on board. This will be an empowering hour, starting off with curcumin. It's found to have protective effects against renal fibrosis. Who says? Well, the peer-reviewed journal Biological and Pharmacological Bulletin, done at the Third Military Medical University in China. Chinese researchers investigated the anti-fibrotic effects of curcumin on epithelial tissue and found that it makes a big difference. So in lay language, it means that when you take curcumin, you're protecting different tissue in the body. In this case, the renal, and it turns the body into a healing potential instead of a diseasing potential. That's the bottom line to all this. There are thousands and thousands of articles on the benefits of curcumin. Next up, from the Mayo Clinic, published in the Journal of the American Osteopathic Association, dairy products increase the risk of cancer. Yes, they can. But plant-based diets can reduce that risk. We'll go into that in some depth. And a lot more on anti-aging and living a healthier and longer life. But also today, we're going to hear a clip put together. I don't know who put it together, but I don't know their political or ideological agenda, but just the information from medical doctors, scientists, journalists, lay people, giving their input on corona. Now, there's a reason I'm playing this. It's not a long clip, but it shows you the varying degrees of frustration that people have with what they're being told to do. And of course, first is quarantining, then it's mandatory vaccines. And as you'll hear one segment, in California, they're hiring thousands and thousands of people to go to your home to make sure that you are in quarantine. And if not, listen to what he says. It's going to be chilling. They have places that they have that you will be put. Now, keep in mind, California does not currently have enough room for where it's hundreds of thousands of homeless people. They sleep on the streets. In fact, over 80 blocks in one direction in Los Angeles, every single square inch is by homeless person. So they're clearly not going to put someone in a tent on the street. So where else could they put them? If they had any other decent housing, they would have put the homeless. So is this the detention camp? There are a lot of them that have been built that are empty. They don't say. So we're left to wonder. I'm just wondering. But this is an accurate statement by the person speaking on behalf of the government. That's why it's important we start putting the pieces together. So this is by no means definitive. In fact, it's superficial, but it gives you an idea, because all of the people in the film who are medical doctors are indeed board-certified medical doctors, and they're giving their thoughts. We'll have that today. Also, I'm posting on prn.fm, easy to find, on the important statements. For example, when Johns Hopkins University reversed its position on that there were no excess deaths from COVID. And then I thought, that's odd, because normally in science, if someone makes an error, you bring the error to their attention and they have a chance to correct it. And that's done all the time. That's one of the things about science. It's open for dialogue, debate, challenge, and correction. But that's not what happened. And what raised a red flag for me in this incident was how visceral the attacks were on the woman who, when you look into her background, she has nothing controversial. She's a highly respected academic, teaching at very high-end universities. She's a PhD, background in mathematical statistics and analysis. She's published in peer-reviewed journals. And suddenly when she finds that there's no difference in the death rate for the last several years between coronavirus, which should have spiked. In other words, If we say that in the United States we have, let's just say for argument's sake, 250,000 deaths from coronavirus, then you should see 250,000 deaths more than what we would normally have from all other causes of disease. You don't. And also, you don't see the deaths from flu or pneumonia. Why not? Shouldn't you also see them, the 40 to 80,000 deaths? Yeah, you should. What, did they suddenly, like Canada, take all their influenza, their flu deaths, pneumonia deaths from the flu and bacterial infections and make those corona? This is what's happening. But everyone and their mother has been able to attack this paper and the author. Why go to that extent? Just say, you know, if there's an error, correct it. So we have sent the woman an invitation to appear on this program, and the invitation simply states that if you agree with those who have retracted your article that you made errors, please just acknowledge that. And how did you not see the errors since you clearly had fact-checking done on your own work? But if you disagree, if you believe that your material is correct and you're given no platform to defend yourself, then we have a platform for you to come on and challenge those who would attack you, including Johns Hopkins University, for retracting the article. So that's what we do. I'm not saying her article is accurate or inaccurate. I'm saying that the attacks against her personally seem extreme when all that was necessary is for her to write a letter stating that now in review she's made some errors and she is willing to correct those, but not to, in effect, shame her, deplatform her, get her fired, destroy her reputation. When you start saying that, there's something more to this story. But we've placed that. Also, former Pfizer vice president says, quote, there's no need for vaccines. Why is he being attacked? He was never attacked in the 30-plus years. He was a mainstream, worldwide respected scientist. Not once. Now he is. Why? So we've posted that entire monologue of him in his own garage, I think it was, because there's a motorcycle beside him. But you don't find people willing to risk an entire impeccable, highly respected career unless they're outraged by what they see as the abuse of science and the lies. So we've posted that as well. Today we've posted many more. So all the things I'm talking about today are posted. Let's go to the latest on health and healing. Now, a lot of people eat dairy products, but a study just published in the Journal of the American Osteopathic Association shows that dairy products may indeed increase the risk of prostate cancer, but plant-based diets may decrease that risk. The Mayo Clinic researchers based their findings on previous studies that examine the link between certain diets and prostate cancer risks. Quote, this is from the study. Our review highlighted a cause for concern with high consumption of dairy products. The findings also support a growing body of evidence on the potential benefits of plant-based diets. End quote. That was from Dr. Shin, the cancer specialist at the Mayo Clinic. Now, why? Well, because plant-based diets help prevent all forms of disease, and we've laid this out repeatedly. There are thousands of studies on the benefits of plant-based or mainly plant-based diets. The researchers analyzed more than 40 studies that comprise more than 1 million participants to see whether prostate cancer risk is associated with plant and animal-based foods. The team found the dairy products are the leading source of calcium in Western countries where rates of prostate cancer are high. Conversely, Asian countries eat fewer dairy products and have lower rates of prostate cancer. The researchers explained that calcium can halt the formation of a form of vitamin D called calcitriol, which could otherwise reduce the spread of prostate cancer cells. However, the team did not specify how much dairy per person can increase the risk of the disease. They also found that plant-based foods are associated with decreased risk of prostate cancer, and that's overall what the message is. One study, by the way, the Japanese researchers examined the dietary records of more than 35,000 men between 40 and 79, and they found those who ate mushrooms three or more times a week had a 17% lower risk of prostate cancer compared to those who had less than one serving a week. Now, mind you, that has nothing to do with the rest of the diet, nothing about supplements. For example, I suggest Africanum pygium and genistein and quercetin and all the other nutrients that are known to impact to protect your prostate gland. This is just eating mushrooms three times a week. That's easy to do. 17% reduction? You bet. Also, in a study of 93 patients with early stages of prostate cancer, one group was assigned to eat a plant-based diet and practice other lifestyle interventions, including regular exercise and stress management, all of which is reasonable. And while a control group continued their usual diet and lifestyle, after 2 years, 27% of the control group had to undergo conventional treatment for prostate cancer, compared to only 5% on the plant-based diet. That's a huge improvement. From the University of Technology, University of Queensland, and Centenarian Institute, they found that your gut microbiome, microbiome, that's the good bacteria in your gut, is linked to deadly lung disease. What do I mean? I mean that for the first time, a link between chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, an often fatal lung condition, and your gut. The findings published in the high-impact science journal Nature Communications suggest that the gut may be helpful in diagnosing COPD, may also be a potential source of new therapeutic targets to help treat the chronic respiratory disorder. So, in lay language, here's what it's saying. When you have healthy bacteria, the good bacteria, from a healthy organic plant-based diet, plus fermented foods, prebiotics, apple cider vinegar, sauerkraut, those are just examples, miso ferments, those create billions of good bacteria. Or you can simply take a supplement with good bacteria that helps prevent COPD, just one of the things that makes it important. From the Medical University of Białystok in Poland, they looked at antioxidants, that's your vitamin C and A and D. It improves cognitive function in Alzheimer's disease. That's good news. So a proper, healthy, let's say, higher potency multiple vitamins and minerals are going to help you if you have Alzheimer's. That's just the way it is. But a lot of people don't take their vitamins. And as a result, they're vitamin deficient, especially in the B vitamins. Because when you're deficient in B vitamins, your homocysteine levels are increased. When you have adequate B complex, they're decreased. And homocysteine is that silent killer. Increase your risk of heart attack and cancers. So you have something that indirectly protects against the development of disease, B complex. But all the vitamins and minerals are important. And finally, from the Karolinska Institute of Technology. No, excuse me, this is from a different one. This is from the Karl Rue Institute of Technology in Germany. They found that just everyday activities can enhance your personal well-being. For example, physical activity makes people happy, and it's important to maintain your psychological health. That's what they found. Last evening, I took a break from writing an article which was published this morning in an important consumer publication, and I went over and I took a look and I saw life in Alaska, and it was about like five different homesteads in Alaska, magnificent views overlooking a gigantic, gorgeous lake. I mean, it was just perfect. And It showed what life was like for these people. And they were all busy, all active, all the time. One guy was building a new log cabin, and it showed you step by step how he and just two other people built this log cabin. All this, I'm thinking, that's a lot of labor from morning till night, every day of the week. And yet the people really liked it. There was no complaining. The only complaint was, well, I got to get out here and bale my hay because it's going to rain. And if the rain hits the hay when it's on the ground, it's going to ruin it. So I got to get it baled and then taken into the barn. But happy? Yes. So doing things that you like doing things that need to be doing that you choose to like doing, all of that keeps you happy. So exercise enhances physical well-being and mental health. Everybody looks better when they're exercising. You have less body mass index. You have a trimmer abs. When you start to see your muscles again and they're ripped and you're 60, 50, 40, 80, and you think, wow, that looks great. You feel good because you've done something for you. No one else did it. You did it. So when you're out there doing your power walk or exercising or biking, you're doing your sit-ups and your push-ups, you feel good about it. And that's what this is about. So everyday activities enhance alertness and physical energy, and your brain regions for everyday activities and well-being are identified now. And they know the volume of gray brain matter was measured to find out which brain areas play a role in these everyday processes. And it was found that the subgenual cingulate cortex, that's a section of the cerebral cortex, is important to interactions between everyday activities, let's just say, and your overall well-being. So you get up in the morning and you take your dog for a run or a walk. That's stimulating this. When you're bonding with your dog or cat or whatever animal you have, that also is a part of this. On that same channel, they had a show to animal sanctuary, a large animal sanctuary, where they have a lot of, you know, this is in Alaska, where they had wolves, and how the keepers interact with the wolves, how the wolves interact with each other, the bison. They reintroduced the first bison in Alaska. They were extinct. Now they've got these bison. They raise them there and then let them go into the wilds. It was just wonderful to see the reaction, the interaction between the people, and they look forward to it. You're looking, you're thinking, wow, that looks awful cold. You know, it's snowy. Yeah, so they chose that. But in the process of choosing that, think of them getting up each day and going out and being able to interrelate with a wild wolf and caribou and elk. They have over 38 different species of animal. They're not in the environment where they used to come from, where it was highly stressed and very competitive and everything was time-related. That means that they're doing something they enjoy doing. And that's the takeaway message. Shouldn't all of us be doing something we enjoy doing? Oh, and by the way, one last thing. From the University of Illinois, potato puree, just peeling and pureeing a potato, is just as effective as carb loading, those little gels that you take, for improving exercise performance. This was done at the University of Illinois. It sustains your blood glucose levels and boosts the athletic performance. This was published in the Journal of Applied Physiology. Who knew, right? Well, now you do. So that's the latest on taking the approach that is unfortunately in America least taken, that to enhance happiness and longevity. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go to this clip. Again, let me state that the clip is based upon different people's reactions to what they have seen thus far, and all the people we verified in here are legitimate medical doctors, and they all have a reason to challenge some part of the official narrative. And yet most of the doctors who are challenging some part, like this quarantine, saying it's unnecessary, the science doesn't support it, are also pro-vaccine. So it's not as if any of these people are alternative, holistic, anything. They're just mainstream. So it's interesting to see that historically, in almost all of our battles, when it came to food irradiation, radiating our food, it was only the alternative doctors. When it came to organic versus inorganic, it was only the organic farmers. When it came to GMOs, it was only the organic movement that fought the GMOs. This is the first time it is only the mainstream fighting the mainstream. That's what makes it interesting. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I am a physician that is trained in ophthalmology. That's my primary training, ophthalmology. I specialized in ocular inflammation and immunology. I continued my training after my residency training, though, and I've also been trained in preventive medicine, interventional endocrinology, and addiction.
Who actually should be scared of COVID-19?
Anybody that should be afraid of COVID-19 needs to be afraid of the flu. Masks have no scientific basis to support community wearing of masks. We're messing up with this social distancing, cowering in our cages and our lockdowns. We are destroying the one thing that really works to improve the health of our community, prevent the transmission, and prevent, you know, protect the vulnerable populations, is we are not enabling herd immunity. They're trying to fear us into submitting to a vaccine that they want to mandate. They want to mandate it for every human being on the planet. A vaccine made by a pharmaceutical company called Moderna. Moderna funded by the Gates Foundation. Gates also funded the Wuhan lab in which this virus emerged. Dr. Fauci has a long history of, in my opinion, fraud, corruption, pseudoscience. He's been stealing the ideas of many of his subordinates in the NIH and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. He has, in fact, violated international treaties against the development of bioweapons or gain-of-function studies. Dr. Fauci should be charged with treason, fraud, cooperation with our enemy, in fact.
Can we trust Dr. Fauci?
Absolutely not.
My name is Jason Beasley. I am not white, and I'm not being paid to say this. I wanted to go over four quick facts to help you better understand the coronavirus.
Why is California coming into your home and separating you from your family?
And we'll isolate every one of them, and we will find every one of their contacts, and we will make sure that they stay quarantined, and we'll check in with them every day. There are going to be thousands of people hired who will be these contact investigators throughout the state. And this is occurring in many, many other states as well, perhaps all of the states. And so we'll be moving people like this into other kinds of housing that we have available.
My name is Julia Marriott, and I am a wife and a working mom to a three-year-old daughter. Why is Dr. Fauci funding the controversial Chinese Wuhan lab with millions of US dollars? Just last year, Dr. Fauci's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases funded scientists at the Chinese Wuhan lab to work on gain-of-function research on bat coronaviruses. Most scientists criticize gain-of-function research because it actually manipulates viruses to dramatically increase their contagiousness and actually has the potential to cause pandemics. Why would you want to increase the contagiousness of a virus that can cause a pandemic?
We also now know that NIAID, the department associated with the National Institutes of Health, of which Dr. Anthony Fauci is in control, had already been conducting experiments with the Wuhan lab in the past in regard to coronavirus.
Doctors online that have made their own webcam videos, just perplexed by the protocol that the CDC had given them.
Why are we being pressured to add COVID to maybe increase the numbers and make it look a little bit worse than it is? I think so.
If someone dies with COVID-19, we are counting that.
If you have a COVID-19 admission to the hospital, you'll get paid $13,000. If that COVID-19 patient goes on a ventilator, you get $39,000.
We're not wearing masks. Why is that? because we understand microbiology, we understand immunology, and we want strong immune systems. Our immune system is used to touching. We share bacteria, staphylococcal, streptococcal bacteria, viruses. We develop an immune response daily to this stuff. When you take that away from me, my immune system drops.
There is no dissenting voices allowed anymore in this free country, which is something I never thought I would live to see.
And I'm blown away why there are not more doctors like me talking about this all over the place. We should be banding together right now. You need to wake up because your liberties are getting taken away from you all because of fake news that's out there.
My name is Daisy Haro. I'm a single working mother of a 5-year-old little boy. Why does Dr. Fauci, the director of the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases, want for us to focus on the number of cases, but not the number of deaths?
So we have been instructed or advised to include COVID-like illness on the diagnoses of most of our charts if they have fever and cough. That goes against everything we've been taught as a PA or a provider or physician. When we diagnose, you state strictly facts. And right now we're being pressure from the hospital because they need funding because our hospital's about to go under because the volumes are so low.
My name is Luke, and I was an associate pastor at a church about a year ago that can no longer meet. Why did we, as American citizens, voluntarily give away our First Amendment rights? Because Neil Ferguson told us to. Who is Neil Ferguson?
Ferguson is a professor at a college in London, but he's also something of an international celebrity. He is best known for his dire predictions about pandemics. On February 28th of this year, as the disease spread throughout Europe, Ferguson publicly endorsed the Chinese model of quarantine, specifically. Now keep in mind that as Ferguson spoke the words you're about to see, videos were circulating on the internet showing police in Wuhan throwing screaming citizens into the back of panel trucks and driving them to some unspecified internment somewhere.
One has to adopt the sort of community measures which have been adopted, particularly in places like Wuhan and China, where you try to reduce contacts between people in the community.
Today, the Telegraph newspaper reported that Neil Ferguson ignored his own lockdowns. While the rest of London stayed trapped indoors, indeed the rest of the country, Ferguson repeatedly invited his married mistress over to his apartment for sex. And then, perhaps most striking of all, he was infected with the coronavirus at the time.
Who funded Neil Ferguson and his organization, the Abdul Latif Jameel Institute for Disease and Emergency Analytics? Both Ford and Amazon announced in 2019 that they were investing hundreds of millions of dollars, with Amazon planning an initial purchase of 100,000 vehicles. Amazon stocks hit an all-time high as it sees an unprecedented...
Okay, that's just some people's comments. Now, and I'm sorry, I can't tell you who was responsible for that. However, here's what I'd like to do. I would like to get a citizen journalist, someone listening right now, who would do the following. And you can call Sharon Pride in our office, our archivist. I spoke with her this morning, and she is willing to screen the people. You're not asked to write anything, just research. And what you would do is you would find all of the clips that are on the internet from all scientists or physicians or nurses that in any way challenge some aspect of the coronavirus pandemic. Once you collect all of them, and no matter how many there are, we would then go through, we have our own editing, and we would take the most essential clip, what they say. They might go on, like there's one of the doctors in here was with another doctor, and they did an hour press conference. Out of the hour press conference, about 2.5 minutes were what were most important. And that's what would be kept. And that's what we would edit. So what we would have then is we would have all the people in the world who have made any comments to challenge the professor who made all this possible. He was the one that the Neil fellow who was talking about at Imperial College. He's the one who had the wrong predictions. He was completely wrong. But the entire reaction to him being wrong from Germany, from Great Britain, and the United States was never corrected. He's the one who said that hundreds of millions would die. This is not the first time he's been wrong. He's been wrong on several occasions. So the idea is that we would have an intelligent, scientifically based critique of all the voices just making the most important statement, not their opinions, not their politics, not their biases, not their ideologies. I don't care about any of that. That's all subjective. But what can be independently validated as correct? We would then have in-house our own scholars review their statements to make sure that these are accurate, that there is evidence, scientific evidence, to back up what they're stating. That way, all of you, everyone, would have this. We would stream this, and therefore you would see, here are the voices, because all these people have been slandered. They've all been libeled. They have been deplatformed. Many of the professors at Stanford and at Yale, top people in their field, never a problem, are now being, there's petitions to throw them out. You don't have that kind of response. You don't try to fire a professor from Yale, an MD, PhD, with 300 published peer-reviewed journals, one of the best epidemiologists in the world, who sits on the scientific advisory board of multiple scientific journals. And all he does is he says, when I looked at the attacks against hydroxychloroquine, I found all this supporting evidence for hydroxychloroquine. And it works at the low doses in the first 7 days. It does not work at high doses at the end of life. He was accurate. Now, since he made that statement, there were 53 articles at that time. As of today, and we sent it over, it's on PRN.fm. All that I'm telling you is on PRN.fm. There are now 176 studies supporting hydroxychloroquine and its effectiveness. And if you took the average effectiveness across the board, it's stopping COVID, it's over 63%. Well, that's phenomenal. It actually stops it. It reverses it. In many cases, it cures it. And yet you can't get hydroxychloroquine in the United States because of Anthony Fauci and Big Pharma. And then the entire left, because Trump mentioned it, that he used it for a week, suddenly they attack it. So anything Trump did, even inadvertently, now became attack it. So they weaponized a drug that could be saving lives. There would be no need for a vaccine. Let me repeat, there'd be no need for a vaccine if we had an effective treatment at the very beginning stages, and also one that was so safe it could be used preventatively for first-line workers and be used in nursing homes. That's why everything we're being told about this should be challenged. So that's, if you're interested in being a citizen journalist and helping us do something, because quite frankly, I don't have the time. I mean, if you were here last night at 2 a.m. and I'm working on an article and then back up early in the morning to go feed the animals and then come back here and continue working, you'd see that every one of the people I work with, a small staff, we are pushing it all the way we can to try to get you as much information so you can make a reasonable and hopefully the right choice. Whether you vaccinate or not is your business. Whether you take the drugs that have been shown not to work, are actually dangerous, that they're promoting, is your business. Whether you choose to do nothing at all is still your business. That's your right. I'm merely trying to provide a firewall between you and what could be the potential of some devastating effects or side effects. That's all. It's that simple. So give a call to 646-926-5437. 646-926-5437. Again, you'll find this is under... when you go to PRN.fm, one of our listeners seems to have a hard time finding any of this stuff. It's all there. But let me just give you an example of what's there that we should be paying attention to that can help us. I mentioned the other day, whether you choose masks or not masks, this particular doctor says there's no science against for masks. We've reviewed all the scientific literature. We are preparing a major report, pro-mask, anti-mask. And we're basing it upon two principles. Does the mask prevent the coronavirus specifically from being transmitted? And does it, if it doesn't prevent the virus specifically, does it prevent other viruses that we wouldn't harm body and or bacteria? And if it does help us, how does it help us and to what degree? So we're going to let you be the judge. We're not making any determination. We're giving you the science, the actual only peer-reviewed science, no one's opinion. It'll be posted later this week. But here's what I read the other day. This is not being discussed anywhere, and this is very problematic. For those of you who are not able to listen to the program, let me repeat this particular short segment. This is an article entitled Masks, False Safety, and Real Dangers, Part 1, Friable Mask Particulate and Lung Vulnerability by Dr. Boris Borovo, Dr. Colleen Huber, and Dr. Mark Makeda. And it, let me get to the part that's important here. If every foreign particle and every fiber in every face mask is always secure and not detachable by airflow, then there should be no risk for inhalation of such particles and fibers. However, if even a small portion of mask fibers are detachable by inspiratory airflow when you're breathing in, or if there is debris in mask manufacture, dust, and packaging and handling, then there is the possibility of not only entry of foreign material in the airways, but also entry deep in the lung tissue and potentially pathological consequences of foreign bodies in the lungs. Then it goes into this in depth. But the whole article we have posted. And it says, human self-masking has become commonplace, whether due to insistence by governments, requirements of employers, educational institutions, business owners, or social pressures in one's immediate social circles. The proximal reason behind these reasons is abundant fear and desire for protection from COVID-19 throughout the world in 2020. People have been either coerced or otherwise pressured to wear face coverings, allegedly for the purpose of slowing the spread of COVID-19. The general public's response is to use disposable surgical masks and a wide variety of cloth masks and other cloth face coverings. In the Western Hemisphere, at least, these face masks had not been worn outside of certain hospital facilities nor outside of surgical settings in intensive unit hospitals. By the way, as an aside, why is that important? Because you're only allowed to use a mask in a hospital once, and that's it. And then it goes on, and here's the important part. Listen carefully. This is the most important. Quote, optimal oxygen intake in humans has been calculated in the absence of any obstruction to the pathways. The U.S. Occupational Safety Health Administration, OSHA, has determined that the optimal range of oxygen in the air for humans is between 19.5 and 23.5%. In previous times, before COVID-19 era, OSHA required that any human-occupied airspace where oxygen measure was less than 19.5 to be labeled, quote, as not safe for workers, end quote. The percentage of oxygen inside a mask airspace generally measures 17.4% within several seconds of wearing. It has been observed that maximal voluntary ventilation and maximal inspiratory pressure increase during lower availability of oxygen, meaning you have to breathe harder to get the oxygen the body needs, but already you're 2 whole percentage points from 19.5 to 17.4, and that's without any of the washing. You wash a mask and watch the little tiny fibers. That's what this is concerned about, breathing in these tiny fibers. And they're in all these masks. Once you've washed them or once you've reused them, and quote, both lower ambient oxygen and increased ambient carbon dioxide stimulates ventilation as the body quickly and steadfastly attempts to acquire more oxygen. And then it talks about the materials used. These, by the way, are all toxic materials used in their manufacturing. and it goes into the masks and what it does. And, quote, inhaled cotton fibers, these are the masks you wear at home, have been shown to cause subpleural ground glass opacities at the surface of the visceral pleura, as well as centrolobular and parabronchial vascular interstitial thickening, as well as fibrosis thickening of parabronchial interstitium. It was found by spectral analysis by infrared spectrometry that the foreign bodies in the lungs had an identical pattern to that of cellulose, which must come from the inhaled cotton fibers. Cotton and even silk may contribute to COPD in textile workers. Biocenosis is a pulmonary syndrome related to textile work when textile workers were exposed to organic dust from textiles in the workplace. Both reversible and irreversible pulmonary conditions such as asthma, COPD, developed. It should be remembered that unmasked textile workers would not have such high inspiratory flow as masked individuals. Therefore, there is even more need that the fibers, debris, and other particulate attached to cloth masks would stay entirely intact. Every fiber, every part of every fiber, and throughout every breath, at all times, even down to the size of nanometers. And then it goes on to talk about all the different diseases you could end up with, and that these are irreversible. Once you get them, you die. Quote, the five-year survival rate is only 20%. The only remedy against this scourge is diligent prevention of small and microscopic inhaled foreign bodies. Now, and it goes on. So the article is there so you can read it. We posted it. Now, mind you, I'm not telling you to wear a mask or not wear a mask. That's your choice. I'm telling you that no one anywhere has told you that you shouldn't keep using the mask and you should use it diligently when you're using it. But who has tested it after a day of use? We've known nurses and physicians to have to use a mask all day when it should have been thrown away after seeing each patient. And what about you who've washed your masks? That means all those fibers are loose. That means you're breathing them in. We could be ending up having lung diseases that would dwarf anything that COVID has been able to create up to this point, and not a single thing has been discussed on this issue. Nothing. I'm Gary Nall. We're 44 minutes into our program. Always take down this number. By the way, if you would like to sign up for our new PRN newsletter, provide your email to prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com. It's free, and you get all the latest of everything. But to listen live to our program, write down this number. This number is 774-337-6033. 774-337-6033. And to archive, meaning go to the archives, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Now we have a nice, pleasant surprise from Great Britain is the Elizabeth McCormick segment, where she reads your emails and letters, chooses ones that she feel will, I guess she does some on medical and some on personal and some on social, different types of questions she believes people would find of interest, and she asked me. Nice to have you with us today, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary, and to all the lovely listeners. It's lovely to be back here again. I thought I would choose a personal relationship one, as people tend to enjoy these especially. This is from Deborah. She says, I'm 45 years old. I'm a professional and well-educated, but have rarely made quality time for myself. I have had three relationships in the last 7 years. They all ended because I couldn't give quality time to them. My career took precedence. I just don't know how to balance it based upon the work that I do. I heard you say once that you wouldn't start a relationship if you couldn't honour the time or the attention needed to sustain it. Does that mean that one simply shouldn't have one? For I believe we all benefit from them. What insights can you offer, please?
Well, it's not just Deborah. I would imagine that we could look at about probably in the neighborhood of 25 million Americans who are professional, about 17 million professionals. That's your higher educated ones, professors, scientists, architects, engineers, CPAs, lawyers, physicians, and other professionals, and those who have their own businesses. And there's about 12 million millionaires. Most of those people own their own businesses. Anyone who's ever owned your own business, you know that you don't work by a standard clock. You have to be there at all times. You have to direct everything. You have to multitask. You have to know every part of a business. So if the stock person doesn't come in, you have to go stock the shelves. You have to be there to be human resources, if you can't afford a human resource person, to resolve issues. And if you're a professional person, we run into the problem. And Deborah, this is the most important part of the answer I would give. All professional people begin by being extremely, my experience, personal experience with people is idealistic. They really believe they're going to do something different and they're going to do it better. And initially they may do that. Then they run into this juggernaut of, okay, this is now overwhelming me. I've got so much debt and it's going to take me several years to get out of this debt. And probably not for the next 10 or 20 years, depending upon how much they spent in their advanced education. And I'm going to have to make some sacrifices. But then when do I start my family? When do I buy a property? When do I actually have time for me or time for a relationship? And that's where we then become either a victim of our conditioning earlier in life, why we became a professional instead of just looking to do something that's simpler, have a more austere existence, less stress existence, more time for ourselves. But for that, you have to have a different mindset. That mindset has to mean that you're not putting your own standard of living first. You're putting quality of life first. And quality of life means, hey, I want quality to enjoy nature, to enjoy my friends, to enjoy a relationship, to enjoy the animals in my life. Whatever you want to enjoy, you have to have time for it. But when everything is about your career, there's almost no time for anything else. You live a very out-of-balance existence. And to try to do more than what you can for your career means that you're not going to do as much for your career, and then you're going to be angry at yourself if you're the average careers, because everything else is evolving around you, and you're not. So there's this artificial and completely unnecessary race to the top, where you have millions, tens of millions of people all trying to outdo each other, what they own, what they bought, gifts, how much they can spend. And it gets really stupid, where people have closets full of clothes and they still get more. There's a little noise in the background, Lisbeth. You're going to have to just don't touch anything or do anything, all right? Might be a little static because she's calling from Great Britain on Skype. In any case, so you have to make a priority. If happiness, balance, and joy are your priority, then you will have time for a relationship. But you have to be able to do that. It can't mean that, okay, you're going to have a relationship, but you can only see the person on Thursday between 8 and 10 o'clock because the rest of your week is just filled. Nobody wants to be fit into someone else's extremely hectic schedule, because it's always difficult for these people to decompress after a day of work. They frequently bring their problems home with them. And then there's the angst of what happens when you have a family as a professional and you spoil them. You feel, well, I've worked this hard to get this success, and so I want everyone in my life to share this success. So now the kids are growing up in a bubble, one of entitlement. They're growing up more often than not, not always, but more often than not, selfish. The world is narrowed to their needs, how they feel. Look at some of the generation that are out there now protesting. The protests are legitimate if they're protesting inequality and racism. Those are legitimate. What's not legitimate are people who are attacking each other or other groups who've never actually taken the time to understand what it is to be the other. And these people have lived in bubbles where the other never exists. I mean, you live in an area code, you go to a certain private school, you go to vacations, you start getting into that mindset, then everything else looks like it's a punishment to bear it. Well, you're not going to eat in that restaurant. You're not going to go to that venue. You're not going to shop in that store because it would somehow taint or diminish your sense of self-importance and relevance. So everything is about maintaining image, and therefore you sacrifice your time, you sacrifice diversity, you sacrifice knowing new religions, knowing new languages, knowing new dietary cuisines. All that is sacrificed. So you live in these extremely insulated bubbles. That is absolutely the majority of our professional class today, because this past Sunday, and I want to thank, yesterday, I want to thank all of you who went down to Union Square yesterday. The next demonstration, I will be there. I won't be there for the big one until this quarantine ends, but I will be there by a special large monitor. We're getting the technology of Zoom together on that. However, for all of you who did show up, and there were hundreds of people there, what do you want to bet that those were just average people, school teachers, firefighters, people of all walks of life, except very few, if any, professionals, very few. I've led hundreds of demonstrations. I have yet to see the professional class in any numbers show up, sprinkling of a few who are more idealistic. And as I mentioned, when you had that big flooding down in Texas a couple of years ago, where they got 21 trillion gallons of water in a very short period of time, there's massive flooding. Who didn't you see out there in rowboats or helping the poor and who were living at ground level and they were literally at risk of dying? You didn't see the professional class because that's not what they do. They're not there helping people except where they're paid for it. Now, I'm not saying that as a cynic. I'm saying that as the reality. This has been true my entire career. That's who I've seen show up. And so what you have to understand is that you have to first deconstruct the image of yourself today, Deborah, if you want to have a new image of yourself where you intentionally make a healthy, happy, exciting, creative, challenging relationship a part of your needs. Then you plan into your and stay away from talking about yourself. There's nothing more boring than hearing people talk about their work. That's not what you should be with someone to do. You should stay neutral of telling people about your crisis and problems. That's not the basis of a healthy relationship. That is a toxic relationship and a victim relationship, and those are always going to go south on you. You want vitalism. You want joy. You want excitement. Create together. But first you have to decide how to pull back, how to downsize, how to deconstruct, how to drop the balls of responsibility, and only pick those up where there's joy and happiness. When you do that, you're going to be working a lot less, earning a lot less money, have less of a standard of living, but a greater quality of life. Then there's time for relationship. That's a long answer, but at least it gives you an idea of what is possible. Okay? That's all we got time for today, Elizabeth. Good to have you back after 9 months of being quarantined in Great Britain. Man, of all the places. Yeah, Great Britain or Bangladesh, they're about both the same. Oh, God, that government is so corrupt. So utterly corrupt. Okay, we look forward to you coming on, how about next Monday? All right.
Yes, that sounds wonderful. All the best, everyone. Thank you.
And if you want to have your question or your comment on the air, just send it to prnstudio@gmail.com, and it'll get to Elizabeth, and next time we'll have something on a different topic on. So that's it. Have a nice day, everyone.